We're beginning here at the top of Mem Zion Amud Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara is continuing its quest to search for a source for the statement of Rav Misharshia, to let know the Hanei Klalei. The Rav Misharshia says that we don't hold of these principles that were laid out by Rabbi Yochanan, the Klalei Apsak of when we have a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yochanan gave us all these principles about how to paskin, and at the end of that, Rabbi Misharshia says, we don't subscribe to these principles laid out by Rabbi Yochanan, but we look at each case individually and make a decision about the psak halacha. Gemara wants to know, from where does Rabbi Misharshia know that, the fact that Rabbi Yochanan's principles are not necessarily true? So four lines down on the Gemara, on the top of Mem Zayin Aleph, it says, El mehad etnan. Maybe it's from this Mishnah. Person who leaves his house and goes to spend Shabbat in another city. Whether it's a non-Jew or a Jew. He causes a problem for the people that he left behind. If he is a member of a courtyard and shares ownership in his courtyard with other people, they wanted to make an Erev Chatzerot, but they didn't include this individual, whether it was a non-Jew or a Jew in the Erev Chatzerot. And they left for Shabbat, and they're spending Shabbat somewhere else. Divrei Rabbi Meir, that's the position of Rabbi Meir, that the individuals then cause a problem in the residual ownership in the chatzer, and you can't carry in that chatzer on Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, Eino Oser. Rabbi Yehuda says that they don't impact. Since they've left for Shabbat, since they have, in a sense, dispossessed their ownership for that Shabbat in the chatzer, therefore the people who remain behind can make an Erev Chatzerot, without consideration of these individuals that left. Rabbi Yossi Omer Nachri Oser, Israel Eino Oser. The non-Jew causes a problem, whereas the Jew does not cause a problem. The difference being that the Nachri who leaves can still return on Shabbat. He might have traveled somewhere, but he has no problem or no issue with traveling back on Shabbat. So even though he left before Shabbat, he might return on Shabbat, and in a sense repossess his ownership in the Chatzer, and that's why he causes a problem. The Jew, on the other hand, when he leaves for Shabbat, the expectation is that he's not coming back on that Shabbat. Because he's going to another city, he's gone away for Shabbat, he's not going to return on that Shabbat. Because of that, his dispossession of his ownership in the Chatzer is good, and they can make an Erev Chatzerot even without that individual being included, because they don't expect him back to repossess his portion of the Chatzer during the Shabbat. Shimon Amer, Afilu Eniach et Beito, Valach Lishpot Etzel Bito Boto Ayir. Even if he leaves his house to spend Shabbat with his daughter in that city, meaning that he could return home if he wanted to, if it was there is this possibility or the opportunity for him to return home, nevertheless, Eino Oser. He does not make it Asur Shegvar Yesiach Dato, because he removed his mind from spending Shabbat there. Even though he has the possibility or the opportunity to return on Shabbat, we don't expect him to, and even he himself, when he left, doesn't expect to come back. So because of that, he does not cause a problem for the remaining people in the Chatzer to make an Erev Chatzerot, even though they did not include him. And on this Mishnah, Amarav Chama Barguri Amarav, Halocha ki Rabbi Shimon. The Halocha is like Rabbi Shimon. Uman Paligalei. And who argues on him in this Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda. Truthfully, even Rabbi Yossi disagrees with him in this Mishnah. They're just bringing one of the two. V'hamart. And one of the principles of Rabbi Yochanan was Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Halocha ki Rabbi Yehuda. We have a machloket at Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, Halacha is Rabbi Yehuda, and certainly here we have Rabbi Yossi, the Halacha should have been like Rabbi Yossi. So, how are you paskin like Rabbi Shimon? Gemara says, Umay Kushya. Doma Hacha Nami, Echid Itmar, Itmar. Gemara is giving the same answer it gave for the previous two Mishnayot, which is, maybe these principles only apply where we don't have an explicit statement otherwise. But, if we have an explicit statement that the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, then the Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Where we have no explicit statement as to what the halacha is, lo itmar, then it's not said, and then we can invoke these principles that were laid out by Rabbi Yochanan. But over here, where we have a statement from Chama Bar Guri Amarav that specifically says halacha is great Rabbi Shimon, then that's not considered by those principles of Rabbi Yochanan. So Gemara now attempts from another Mishnah, Elameha Ditznan, from this Mishnah. V'zehu she'amru ani me'arev bigar aglav. The Ani makes an Eruv by taking himself out of the location where he wants to make his Shvitah, and he stays there ben Hashmashot. Rabbi Meir Omer, Anu Ein Lanu Ela Ani. That's the only person who can do this, is an Ani, a poor person. Poor person doesn't have the ability or the means to leave food out to make the Eruv where he wants to have his Eruv, not in his house, but somewhere else. And therefore, the methodology that he uses is not putting food there, but rather he himself staying there, Benesh Mashod, and then returning to his house. But that ability to make an Eruv in such a manner is only granted to an Ani, to a poor person, because he can't do it any other way. But a rich person who has the ability to do it through food and putting bread there will demand that he does it that way. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Echad Ani v'Echad Ashir. A wealthy person or a poor person can use this methodology. Lo amru marvim bepat el hakel ashir. The ability to use bread instead of physically going out there is a kula. It's a dispensation from one who can't afford it, who can put the bread out there. Then he has the ability to do that, so he doesn't have to walk out there physically. But that doesn't preclude him from walking out there physically and making the eruv. Shalo yitzei v'yarei v'raglav. The kula is that he doesn't have to physically go out there and be there to make his eruv. He can send it out with someone else, put the food there, and that'll be his eruv. So Rabbi Meir believes that the Ani is the only one who can make an Eruv through being there physically. The Ashir must use the food and place the food over there. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says that both the Ani and Ashir have the ability to make their Eruv through physically being present there. But the Ashir also has this other possibility, which is if he doesn't want to be there physically, he could send a meal to be placed out there where he wants to make his Shvitah for that Shabbat to create the 2,000 amot of his Eruv Tumin. Umani le Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi le Chiya bar Rav. And this Mishnah was said over by Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi to Chiya bar Rav, kamei de Rav, in front of Rav. Echad ani v'echad ashir. Ve'amar le Rav, and Rav said about this, siim ba nami alocha ke Rabbi Yehuda. Say that the alocha is like Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, that bring this Mishnah down, and then be aware of the fact that the alocha is like Rabbi Yehuda in this Mishnah. Mar says, tarte lamali. Why do I need two principles to teach me that halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? First, we have Rav's explicit statement here that halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Plus, we have the principle of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, halacha ke Rabbi Meir. So why do I need both of them? Va'amart, you already said, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, halacha ke Rabbi Yehuda. I says, umay kushya. Dilma Rav, leitle lahane klale. Maybe Rav doesn't hold or doesn't subscribe to these principles of Rabbi Yochanan. So, great, Rabbi Misharshia might subscribe to Rav's position, but that doesn't say anything about Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan can have these principles, and this Mishnah doesn't say anything about undermining those principles. You're right. Rav may not subscribe to those principles, may not agree with Rabbi Yochanan with regards to those principles, and that's why over here he says, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. But Rabbi Yochanan doesn't need that. He can just use his principles of Rabbi Meir of Rabbi Yehuda, Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. So, because Rav disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan, that's not a proof to late little Hanik Lali, that we don't subscribe to these principles of Rabbi Yochanan. Elamehad etznan. Maybe we can learn that from this Mishnah. Hayivama lotach lots velotit yabim ad yula shlosha chodoshim. Hayivama, a woman who is widow, does not have any children, she may not perform chalitza or yibum until we have 3 months that have elapsed. We'll see again, the Mishnah continues and discusses this in numerous situations, but the problem or the fear that we have is that the woman is pregnant at this time. And if she's pregnant, then it would be a problem to perform yibum with her, or on the other hand, she wouldn't necessarily need chalitza. So we wait the 3 month window in order to ensure that she's not pregnant. By 3 months, if she became impregnated right before the loss of her husband, then we would know already if she was pregnant. If at the end of the term 3 months we see she's not pregnant, then we don't have to worry about that anymore, and we perform chalitza or yibum. But we don't do it before the 3 month period because of this fear that she might be pregnant. V'chein shagol anashim, any other woman as well, lo yinasu v'lo yitarsu, should not get married, should not get engaged, ad yulahen shlosha chodashim, unless they have at least a 3 month window between their previous marriage and the new marriage. Echad bitulot ve'echad bi'ulot. It doesn't matter whether the woman who is married was a bitula or she was a bi'ula. Echad almanot ve'echad grushot. Doesn't matter if she was widowed or she was divorced. Echad arusot. Doesn't matter if she was only engaged to the first individual. Echad nesuot, or whether she's married to them. That's the first part of the Mishnah. The first part of the Mishnah says, no matter what the status of this woman is, if she somehow was connected to a man previously, in order to marry the next individual, this next man, no matter how she was freed from the first marriage, no matter what her status was in the first marriage, she must wait 3 months in between. The truth is that in all these cases, you wouldn't necessarily have to wait 3 months, or the chashash of her being pregnant. Nevertheless, we say, we're gozer in all of these cases, otu. Where goes there, irusin, atu nisuin. Where goes there, grusha, atu amana. In all these cases, we say, she has to wait 3 months, lo plug. The problem being, or the chashash here being, that if she marries within a three-month window between the first marriage and the second marriage, if she then has a baby, it would be uncertain as to which marriage produced that baby. It would be a possibility that it was a baby whose term was 9 months from the first marriage. Or the other possibility is that it's a baby whose term is 7 months from the second marriage. And then we wouldn't know who the father of the child was. So in order to prevent that problem, or to ensure that we don't enter into that problem, we ask the woman to wait 3 months between the marriages. That way, if she was pregnant from the first marriage, we would know by the end of the 3 months if she was pregnant. And if she's not, and then becomes pregnant, we are certain it came from the second marriage. So that's the position of the Tanakhama, with the assumption being that that is Rabbi Meir's position because it's a Stam Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nisuot Itarsu, Va'arusot Inasu. Woman that was previously married, fully married, she had Nisuin, then she can get engaged, but not get married. The engagement here is a halachic engagement, it's Kiddushim, which bonds the two of them together, but does not permit them to live together. In their day, they used to have Erusin a year before, and then a year later, they had Nisuin, where they got married. So their halachic engagement, which is the equivalent of Kiddushim, was then consummated with the Nisuin at a later date, which was Chuppah, when they began to live together. So if this woman had already lived with another man, she had Nisuin with him, then she can get engaged, halachically engaged, within that three-month period, but she may not marry until the three-month period elapses. On the other hand, an Arusa, a woman who was only engaged halachically beforehand, she only had Kiddushim, but never reached the consummation of the marriage in Nisuin, then Inasu, she can get married within that three-month period, because she never had Biyah with her previous husband, with the first husband, and so therefore there's no chashash of her being pregnant. So therefore she could get married or have Nisuin right away. Chutz, the exception to that rule, is Arusa Shebiyuda. The Arusot in Yehuda, those that only had an halachic engagement in Yehuda, despite the fact that their marriage never reached consummation with Nisuin, nevertheless, in Yehuda, they had a problem because of Nesh Libo Gaspa. In Yehuda, they used to allow the woman and the man to be Nityachet, to be alone. They had Kiddushin. They were, in some sense, permitted to be alone, even though they didn't have Nisuin, in order that they should become accustomed to each other, that they should feel a certain amount of comfort with each other, so at the time of Nisuin, they would feel much more at ease at marriage and at the time of the consummation of the marriage. But because of that minhag, or that process, it also led to sometimes the possibility that if the husband who was neras to this woman would feel so comfortable that he might have beer with her prior to the consummation of the marriage. So because of that, an arusan yuda is accepted from this rule, and there we would worry about the fact that she possibly had biyah before the nisuin, and she'd have to wait the requisite 3 months. Rabbi Yossi Omer, kol nashim yitarsu, hutz min almana. That we have a low plug. All women can get engaged within that 3 month window after the termination of the first marriage, no matter what the source of the termination of the first marriage was, or what the status of the woman was. Hutz min almana. Except for a woman who is widowed, mipnei ibul. Because she, at that point in time, is be'avelut, and it would be inappropriate for erusin at the time that she is in avela. So only because of that inconsistency do we say that she can't have erusin. But everybody else we say is erusin. Again, Rabbi Yossi is lo-blog. Unlike Rabbi Yehuda, who differentiates between nisuot and erusot, he says no matter what the previous status of the woman is, they're allowed to get engaged, but not to have nisuin. V'amrinan, on that, we have this story. Rabbi Elazar lo al the Beit Midrasha. Elazar did not enter the Beit Midrash on that day. Ashkehay the Rabbi Yasi. After the learning of the Beit Midrash, he found Rabbi Yasi on that day. Davakayim. Amar lei, my amor be Beit Midrasha. What did they speak about? What was the learning in the Beit Midrash today? Amar lei hachi amar Rabbi Yochanan. This is what Rabbi Yochanan says. Alocha ge Rabbi Yossi. Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. So from that it sounds like the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi because there's an individual who argues on him. It's only one person argues on him. Where it says, in, that is the case. There is only one individual that argues on him. Because, Vatanya, we have a braita, Binichuta, explaining this. If she on a regular basis returned to her father's house, or she had some sort of disagreement or discord with her husband. Oshaya bala zakein, or her husband was very old. O chole, or he was very sick. Oshaita hi chola, or she was very sick. Akara, or she's a woman who is barren. Zakeina, a woman who has reached the age of menopause. Kidana, a woman has yet to reach the age of menstruation. Vailonit, a woman who does not have the simanim that would define her as being a regular female, and she cannot give birth. Vishaina ruya leled, or a woman who does not have the ability to give birth. Osheya bala chavush beit asurim, or her husband was incarcerated in jail. Hamapelet lachar mitat bala, or a woman who has a miscarriage after her husband passes away. They all have to wait 3 months. So even though in all of these instances, there's really no reason to worry about the fact that the woman is pregnant. Because of all these scenarios, it was unlikely, almost impossible, that she had intercourse with her husband. And if that's the case, there's no reason to wait the 3 months. Nevertheless, the Braita says, we wait the 3 months. It's a low plug. All women must wait that 3 month period before they get married. Divrei Rabbi Meir. The author of that position is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi, Matir de Ares, Vilina Se Miad. Yossi says they can get engaged and even consummate the marriage, have Nisuim immediately. So here we see that Rabbi Yossi is arguing with Rabbi Meir, who is the Dat Yachid. Rabbi Meir was the Tana Kama of the previous Mishnah that we quoted, and this Braita supports that understanding, that Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah is arguing on the Tana Kama. The Tana Kama was Rabbi Meir, and the Tana Kama's position is not the position of the Rabbanan. It's the position of Rabbi Meir. And we prove that from the Braita that shows that Rabbi Meir is the author of that position, and Rabbi Yossi is arguing on that position of Rabbi Meir. And the Gemara says, Lomoli, why do I need you to tell me that Aloha is Rabbi Yossi? Vahamart, you already gave us the principle. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Aloha is Rabbi Yossi. When you have a machlok at Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Aloha is like Rabbi Yossi. So why do I need Rabbi Yochanan to come and tell me that Aloha here is Rabbi Yossi? Maybe there is a reason that you needed that over here, because Dilma lafuke mid Rav Nachman Amashmuel. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan is coming to negate the position of Rav Nachman Amashmuel, Damar, because they say Aloha Rabbi Meir b'gzerutav. Anytime in the Mishnah where Rabbi Meir is machmir, meaning that he is gozer, he has gzerut in the Mishnah, we pass an Aloha like him. So that's what Rav Nachman Amashmuel says. And over here, that's exactly what Rabbi Meir is doing. He's being machmir, he's gozer. Erusin atu nisuin. He goes there, a woman who didn't have bia with her husband, atu a woman who did have bia with her husband. So this is a case where Rabbi Meir is being gozer. And since the principle of Rabbi Nachman Shmuel is that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir, gozerotav, I would have thought that that would trump over here, and the halacha would be like Rabbi Meir, despite the fact that Rabbi Yossi is found in the Mishnah. So along comes Rabbi Yochanan to say, no, this still conforms to the normal principles of Klalei Apsak. And here you have Rabbi Yossi versus Rabbi Meir. The halacha is Rabbi Yossi. So again, we fail to find an instance where the principle of Rabbi Yochanan is undermined and would support the statement of Rabbi Sharshia that we don't subscribe to these principles. Elameha detanyo. Let's attempt it from this braita. Hochim liurid shel nachrim. You're allowed to go to the marketplace of the non-Jews. Speaking here of the urid was a market or shuk that was put together on one of their holidays and in some ways was a celebration of that avodah zara, that God, in the Yerid. So you're allowed to go to that Yerid and purchase, lochimen, and you're allowed to purchase from them, beima, animals, vavadim, servants, ushvachot, and maidservants, batim, houses, and sadot, fields, gramim, and vineyards. So Rashi says, the reason that you can do this is, with regards to beima, avadim, and shvachot, is because then you're male lahem l'kdusha. You're actually elevating the status of these individuals, or these animals, to be yoter kadosh. And so because of that, you're permitted to purchase them. With regards to batim, sadot, ugramim, Rashi says two possibilities, either because you are mima'atan, because you diminish their wealth in that way, or diminish their standing, so that's okay, or because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that this story or this situation takes place in Eretz Yisrael, and you're allowed to purchase these pieces of land, these tracts of land, fields, or vineyards because of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So are you permitted, despite the fact that it's a little bit questionable about participating in the shuk, but because there is here an overarching reason, important reason here to go ahead and make these purchases despite the mitigating factor of it being a Yerid Shel Avodah Zarah, we say go ahead and make these purchases at the Yerid. Ve'kotev u'maleh b'arkot shelhem. And the contracts that are signed over these sales, you're allowed to take into their courts and have them be certified by their courts. Even though it gives kavod to their court system, nevertheless, in order to protect your investment, you're allowed to go in their courts and have them certified by those non-Jewish courts. Because it's like saving it from their hands. It's allowing the purchase to go through and protecting your investment. Because if you don't do this, then in the end you might lose everything that you expended over here. V'maya kohen, if he's a kohen mitamei b'chutz laaretz ladun ulererim mehem. So kohen is allowed to become tamei and go out to chutz laaretz, even though the chachamim were goes there in chutz laaretz, it has the din of tumah. Nevertheless, a kohen can go out to chutz laaretz in order to deal with issues like this, in order to litigate a case like this, to keep the land or the purchases that he made. Ukshem shemetamei b'chutz laaretz, kach metamei b'beit akvarot. And just like he's allowed to exit Eretz Yisrael, go to chutz laaretz and become tamei, he also can go into a cemetery in order to litigate one of these cases. It says beit akvarot zakadatwa. How can he go into a cemetery? That's tuma d'oraitoi. That's tuma min haTorah. No one's going to allow him to violate an isur mid d'oraita in order to save some money, in order to protect his investment. That certainly can't be the case. When you're talking about tumat chutz laaretz, that's a takanat chachamim. That's a din derabonon. So they can waive it in the face of matzil humi adam, or he's going out to be ma'er alehen. But when it's tumat d'oraita, they can't waive it. Ela bebeit apras derabonon. We're talking about here tumat derabanan, going through a field in which a kever, there was a grave that was lost in the field, and then the field was plowed over, and we fear that the bones or the mate was spread out over the field. He's spread out to the point where we don't worry about tumat ola anymore because there's not a significant amount of the mate together. But we do worry about is tumat maga coming into contact with one of the bones or tumat hesait, which is that you cause a movement of one of those bones that would make you tameh. And therefore, in general, the chachamim would go there that a kohen may not enter such a field. The Rabbanan gave dispensations for kohanim to enter those fields in extenuating circumstances like bringing their korban haPesach, for Brit Milah, certain exceptions to the rule, by either having the Gawain lay down and blow the dirt in front of him to make sure that there are no bones in it to move that way, or to walk on a path that has been heavily walked on, heavily utilized, because then the dirt has been impacted to the ground and the bones won't move or be able to touch it anymore, and it won't be a problem for the Gawain to traverse the field. So we waive this Isur de Rabbanan of a Gawain going into the Beit HaPras in order to take care of these financial situations. Umatamei, and in addition to that, he can become tamei lisa isha. In order to get married, he can go to chutz laaretz or pass through this beit haPras in order to marry a woman, v'lomot Torah, in order to learn. Amar Rav Yehuda, ematai, when is that true? V'zman shein motzei lumot, when he doesn't find anyone to learn with in his current position or his current situation. But motzei lumot lo itama. If he can find someone to learn locally, then he shouldn't go out to chutz laaretz and become tamei in order to learn Torah. Rav Yossi Omer, even if he has the possibility of learning here, he can still go out and become tamei the fi. Because people are particular about their teachers, they don't necessarily merit to learn from every teacher, and therefore he has to find the teacher that works for him and gives him the ability to learn. So even if there is a local teacher, if there's somebody better or someone that he connects with better outside, he can become tamei. I mean, tumat derabanan, he can become tamei in order to do that. So the Kohen here is permitted or given a dispensation to violate Tuma mid Rabbanan for these important issues. One is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, in order to protect his investment in the lands or what he purchased from a Nachri. The other one is Lisa Yishad, get married. And the last one is Lumot Torah. So this is something that has a broader context. This isn't really the main sugya. The main sugya is in Avodah Zarah and other places as to what one is permitted to leave Eretz Yisrael for. There is a general restriction against leaving the land of Israel if one lives in the land of Israel. And there are dispensations to leave. So the question is, how does this Gemara fit into those dispensations? Over here, the Gemara gives very specific items. It says, Lumot Torah, Lisa Isha, or for saving their land from being taken, or monetary loss. Those are the three dispensations. Are those the only examples of items that you can leave Eretz Yisrael for? Or are these simply major issues that allow a Kohen to become Tamei, Matir Rabbanan? But these aren't necessarily the only reasons you can leave Eretz Yisrael for. Or, again, maybe they're just examples. And any other item that you need to leave Eretz Yisrael for, you have some sort of necessity, that would be sufficient. So the Rishonim speak about this sugya in the context of that broader sugya. Tamar Rabbi Yosef, Maase bi Yosef HaKohen, Shalach Etzel Rabo Litzidan. There's a case by Rabbi Yosef that the Yosef HaKohen followed his Rebbe until Tzidan, Lumot Torah. So he went to Chutz Laaretz, even though he was a Kohen, to follow his Rebbe in order to learn Torah. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, Allah ki Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yochanan says Allah is like Rabbi Yossi. V'elamali. Why does Rabbi Yochanan have to tell me the Allah is like Rabbi Yossi? Amart, you already told me Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, who are the two positions in the Mishnah, that Allah ki Rabbi Yossi. So I'm Rabbi Yitzrich. You need it over here, because Salka dat chamino, I would have thought Rabbi Yochanan's principles only apply by Mishnayot, because by Mishnayot, they have much better redaction, and we can assume that the authorship of the positions is correct. Whereas by the Braitot, there are some questions as to the veracity of the Braitot, as well as to their redaction, and it could be that the position of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi has been mixed up, and if that's the case, then you would make a mistake with that principle of Halacha, passing like Rabbi Yossi, because maybe it's not really Rabbi Yossi. So I would have thought that the principle of Rabbi Yochanan only applies to Mishnayot, not to Braitot. The Mashmalon, the Rabbi Yochanan says over here, that the Halacha of Rabbi Yossi, that afilu bebraita, by a Braita, imalot, that it wouldn't work in Mashmalon, that is the case by a Braita, even by a Braita, the principles of Rabbi Yochanan apply. So that's why Rabbi Yochanan told us the Halacha is like Rabbi Yossi here, to tell us that his principles apply not only to Mishnayot, but also to Braitot. So Gemara is at a loss now. Where did Rabbi Misharshi ever come up with this position that Rabbi Yochanan's klalim don't apply? Ella hachi gamar. We have to amend that statement of Rabbi Misharshi to make more sense, which is hanei klalei lav v'divrei kol ninhu. Those principles laid out by Rabbi Yochanan are not agreed to by everyone. Daha rav leilei lahanei klalei. Because Rav does not subscribe to these positions. We saw that before, that when we quoted the Halacha b'shem Rav, we said, well, that's Rav. Rav doesn't necessarily hold or subscribe to these principles of Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Misharshia says, that statement of Rabbi Yochanan about these klalei apsak is not Divrei HaKol, because we have Rav who disagrees with Rabbi Yochanan. So it's not that Rabbi Misharshia is making a statement to totally dismiss the position of Rabbi Yochanan, but rather telling us that there is another position that objects to Rabbi Yochanan's position, and that is the position of Rav. Now the Gemara continues. Am Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Chefzei Nachri, Ein Konin Shvita. So we spoke about before a machloka between the Rabban and Rabbi Yochanan Menuri with regards to Chefzei Hefker. Unowned items, are they Konin Shvita? Rabbi Yochanan Menuri says yes, and the Rabbanan say no. So now the Gemara moves on to what about objects that are owned by a Nachri, by a non-Jew? What is the status of those objects on Shabbat? Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel says, Chefzei Nachri ein konim shvita. They are not koneh shvita. Laman. According to whom is this statement made? Is this statement made according to the Rabbanan or according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? Ilem Rabbanan. If it's a Rabbanan, pshita. It's pretty straightforward. It's simple. Hashta Chefzei Hefker. Delet luhu balim. Chefzei Hefker that have no balim, no ownership to them. Ein kunim shvita. They are not acquiring any shvita. Chefzei nachri. The ilu balim. That they do have ownership. Mibai. There you have to ask a question. Now, the logic doesn't seem to be so straightforward. When you have an owner, it makes more sense that you have shvita. The problem here is that the owner is a non-Jew. And the non-Jew has nothing to do with shvita. He has no connection to shvita whatsoever. So if by chefzei hefker, where there is no owner, we say they're not kone shvita, then chavatzim of a nachri, who has no shaykhut to shvita, then certainly over there, they should not be gone shvita. So according to the Rabbanan, this statement of Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, is not necessary. It would be obvious that that was the case. Ela libet Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. It must be said, according to the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, v'kamashalan, ima d'amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri goyim shvita. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that Chefzei Hefker are gone shvita, hanim mile Chefzei Hefker. That's only by Chefzei Hefker, unowned items, the Lelu Balim, because they have no owners. Ava Chefzei Nachri, but objects that are owned, or utensils of the Nachri, of the non-Jew, the Lelu Balim, that does have ownership, lo, that would not be the case. They would not be Kone Shvita, because the Nachri himself causes the problem, because his ownership is an ownership by a Baal, by an owner who has no connection to Shabbat or Shvita, the Shabbat. So therefore his objects are not Kone Shvita, even according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Is that really true? Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer. Shimon Elazar says, a shoel kli min anachri, someone who borrows a utensil from the non-Jew, v'yom tov, on yom tov, v'chein ha-mashil lo l'anachri kli mi-erev yom tov, or someone who lent an object or utensil to the nachri on erev yom tov, v'chzira lo b'yom tov, and then the nachri, the non-Jew, gives it back to the Jew on yom tov itself. V'ha-kelim v'ha-utzarot, utensils, or storage containers or storage areas shaftu b'toch ha-tchum, that were within the limits of the city or the tchum of the city. All of these items, yesh lehem alpayim amah l'chol ruach, they have 2,000 amot in every direction. So this keli that you borrowed from the nachri, when you borrow the object, that object has a shvita from wherever it came into Shabbat on, and it gets 2,000 amot in every direction. If you lent your item to the nachri, and then when they entered Yom Tov, the nachri still had it. So your utensils are not kone shvita with you, because they're not with you. They have nothing to do with you. You already lent them out. So they're kone shvita with a nachri, who doesn't really have shvita. So because of that, they're kone shvita on their own, and they get 2,000 amot in every direction. the Kelim and the Otsarot, where we're talking about a case of Hefzei Hefker, both Tosafot and Rashi seem to agree that we're talking about Hefzei Hefker here. Those Chafetzim that are Hefker, that are unowned, they also acquire Shvitah, and they have 2,000 Amot in every direction. Tosafot points out over here that these 2,000 Amot don't necessarily mean 2,000 Amot from wherever the object was going to Shvitah, but it's 2,000 Amot from within the city limits. If they're encompassed or enclosed in a walled city, then they get the 2,000 amot from the end of the walls of the city outward, but not that they get 2,000 amot from their exact location. And then additionally, a nachri shevilo perut mechutz l'tchum, a nachri that brings perut, fruits, from outside of the tchum, harizelo izizam mimkoma, they can't be, they've left their tchum, and therefore they only get dalet amot in every direction, you can't move them from their location. And these are perut, they're coming chutz l'tchum. Why are they coming from chutz l'tchum? Because they had shvitah somewhere else. They had shvitah with the nachri, but that's why they're called mechutz l'tchum. So, iamart bishlama, kasav Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, chefzei nachri konim shvitah. If Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, in addition to saying that chefzei efker are konim shvitah, he also says chefzei nachri are konim shvitah, Hamani, the author of this braita, will be Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Meaning that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar would be saying his opinion within the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. He subscribes to that position that Chefzei Efker and Chefzei Nachri are Gonim Shvita. Eliyah Mart Kasav Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri Chefzei Ef Nachri ain't Gonim Shvita. If you suggest, like we did before, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says Chefzei Efker are Gonim Shvita, but the Chavatzim of the Nachri are not Gonim Shvita, Hamani, who does Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar subscribe to in his position? Lo Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Velo Rabbanon, he's like neither of them, because he's saying here that the Nachri, or the utensils of the Nachri are Konim Shvita, and both Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Rabbanon agree that they're not Konim Shvita. Where it says, Olam Kasav Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Chefzei Nachri Konim Shvita. Okay, that makes sense. Let us say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri believes just like Chefzei Efker are Konim Shvita, so too Chefzei Nachri are Konim Shvita. And Rabbi Shimon Elazar, his statement in the Braita, will be according to that position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. But what about before? We had the statement of Rabbi Yehuda Mar Shmuel that Chefzei Nachri ain't Konim Shvita. They're not Konim Shvita. And we said, well, it can't be that they're making that statement in the Rabbanon because that's too simple. That's too pashut. So we have to say that that's in the position of Rabbi Yochanan Nuri. Well, how can they say that in the position of Rabbi Yochanan Nuri if we're now saying that Rabbi Yochanan Nuri really believes that Chefzei Nachri are Konim Shvita? So Gemara says, Ushmuel Damar Ki Rabbanon. Shmuel's position was said in the Rabbanon. Udika Amart. But you asked the question on that, the Rabbanon Pshita. According to Rabbanon, that's simple. You don't need Rabbi Yehuda to tell you that din, so ma'udu temo, I would have thought gzeira balim din achriyatu balim di Israel. That in this instance, the Rabbanon, even though they believe Chefzei Efker are not gonim shvita, but Chefzei Nachri, they would say they should be gonim shvita, atu balim di Israel. Since you have an owner here, it happens to be the owner is not Jewish, so he shouldn't really be gonim shvita. But nevertheless, we don't want you confusing that with the Jewish ownership, which does cause a kinyan shvita. So because of that, they made it low plug that anytime there's an object that's owned, we would say that it's Konei Shvita. So you would have thought that that was the position of the Chachamim. Kamash Malan. That's what Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel comes to teach us, that despite the fact that you might want to say this, the locha is that Chefzei Nachri are not Konim Shvita. Rabbi Chiya Ba'avin Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Chefzei Nachri Konim Shvita. And Rabbi Chiya Ba'avin says the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the Chavatzim of Nachrim are Konei Shvita. Gzeira. Why are they Konei Shvita? Gzeira Balim De Nachri, Adu Balim De Israel. So gzeira, because of non-Jewish ownership, out to when there is Jewish ownership, where it would be Konei Shvita. So we have a machloki between Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel with regards to this. Rabbi Yochanan believes that Chefzei Nachri are Konim Shvita, whereas Shmuel believes that Chefzei Nachri are not Konim Shvita. So now we have a case. Hanu dichrei da'atul mivrachta. There were these rams that were brought to the city of Mivrachta. Sharuluhu Rava the Vnei Mechuzah. Rava permitted the people of Mechuzah, where he was the Rav of that city, the Mizbamanayu, to purchase them from them, even though they came from Mechutz Litrum. So Amarle Ravino the Rava, Maidatech, why are you permitting this? You're thinking, Damar Rav Yehuda Meshmol Chefzei Nachri and Konim Shvita. Because these were the objects that belonged to an Achri, and therefore there was no Shvita, they were not Kone Shvita, they're not Kone Shvita, they're not really coming Michutz L'Tchum, they're not really leaving any Tchum of theirs, and therefore they take on the Tchum of whoever possesses them first, whichever Jew purchased them or possesses them first. So that's why you're passing that the name of Huzah can partake or buy these items. Vashmuel v'Rabbi Yochanan. The machloket here is between Rabbi Yochanan and Vishmuel, Alokhaki Rabbi Yochanan. When you're doing that, you're following the position of, I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel, But we have a statement from Rabbi Yochanan to the contrary. And when you have a machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. So how are you passing like Shmuel? From Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, and we know that because I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, Rabbi Yochanan chepsin achri gonim shvita. Gzeira balim min achri, atu balim min Israel. Because we have this gzeira that we worry about ownership of an achri being confused with the ownership of the Jew. And therefore we made it anything that's owned as a din of shvita. So hadar amarava, zdabnu b'nei birkata. Now b'nei mechuzah again purchased them, only the people of birkata. Because the whole city of Mivrikta has a status of Dalet Amot. Since when they brought these items in Mechutz L'Tchum, and they reached the city of Mivrikta, the city, as Rashi says, is enclosed with a wall, it has a wall around it, and therefore the city has a status of being like Dalet Amot. Similar to the position of Rabbi Gamliel, who robbed Pasan Halacha like him, which is that Dir V'Sowar U'Sfina, that have a wall around them, if the person is taken out of their Tchum and dumped in those areas on Shabbat, they get the entire area, not just the Dalet Amot, because it's classified like, halachically, like it is Dalet Amot. So too over here, these animals that were brought from the Mechutz L'Tchum, owned by the Nachri, and Ochanami, they were going as Shvita, because that's the position of Yochanan, and that's the way we're going to paskin. Nevertheless, once they were brought out of the Tchum by the Nachri, against their will, quote-unquote, and they land in the city, they land in an area that's enclosed with a wall. And since it's enclosed, it's like the whole city is Dalet Amot, and since the whole city is Dalet Amot, you can utilize them throughout the city. And that's what Rava said, that the people of the city where they were brought to can utilize them, but B'nai Chuza, who were close enough within the Tchum of that city, cannot utilize them because they may not move from their Dalet Amot. It just happens to be that their Dalet Amot is the whole city of Birkata. Tosafot over here makes an interesting point, which is that we consider the city to be Kedalet Amot because of the Mechitzot around the city. Earlier in the Masechta, we discussed the fact that the city plus Ibura is classified like Dalet Amot. And over there, it's clear that the Ibur is outside the Mechitzot of the city. So Tosafot differentiates between a person who, Me'ikara Shabbat, in the beginning of Shabbat, was in the city. The classification of the city being Dalet Amot not only includes the enclosed city, that which is within the wall, but even the Iburah, the extension, the tracts of land that are outside the city. But if a person is brought Mechutz L'Tchum and dumped in those areas on Shabbat, then the Dalet Amot is only the classification of that which was in the Mechitzot. So there will be a difference between a person who acquires Shvita in the city before Shabbat. His Dalet Amot will be the enclosed city plus, whereas someone who's brought there on Shabbat outside of the Tchum, for them the Dalet Amot will be governed by the Mechitzot, and he will not be granted the Iburah She'ir as part of his quote-unquote Dalet Amot. Tani Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya taught in a brayta, Cherem sheben tchumei Shabbat, tzarich mechitza shel barzel lahafsigo. If you have a cherem, which we'll discuss in 1 second what this is, between two tchumei Shabbat, you need a metal mechitza divider between them in order to divide it up. Now Rashi says the word cherem comes from the expression of mitzudot v'charamim, meaning that it's a trap, a fish trap. And Rashi says that it's a gedar shokanim. It's actually a fence that is made out of reeds. It was a partition or a fence made out of reeds in which the fish used to get caught, or it used to stop the fish from going, and it was used to trap the fish. So that's what Rashi says. It's a divider in the water that's made out of reeds. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam explains that the word cherem comes from the word yam or mayim, and it refers to a body of water. The other possibility is the Rabbeinu Hanano says that cherem is a neka, some sort of depression or gorge in the land that is filled with water. It's a crevice filled with water, because the word cherem is a lashon charitz, a crevice. In this case, it happens to be filled with water. And you have this body of water has a city to its east and a city to its west. The tchum of the cities from their ibur, the area, this outside area of the cities, till the water is 2,000 amot, and it ends right in the middle of the water body. You divide the water body in half. The 2,000 amot from the city on the east come to the middle of that water body, and the 2,000 amot from the city on the west also come to the middle of that body of water. So the water itself, half of it belongs to the east and half of it belongs to the west in terms of the tchum, in terms of the people in this city. Now, even though in the past we said that water outside of the city or rain that falls outside of the city, the Bnei Ayir have their mind on it, and therefore the water has the status of Anshei Ayir, Tosafot points out that we don't say that over here because you have two parties vying for the water. And since there are two parties vying for the water, neither of them can really take ownership or have in mind that it's theirs. We say Bdela Datam. Their intentions are wiped out because they don't necessarily have a right to the water because of the other city. So along comes Rabbi Chiya and says, well, if they want to utilize that water, they need a metal partition made out of barzel in the middle of the water, in order that the people from the east only utilize the water on the eastern side of that water body, and it doesn't commingle with the water on the western side. And same for the western people. The people coming from the west, they can use that water that's not commingled with the eastern side, and each one of them will have their water as part of their tchum and not have any overlap between them. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. Yossi Rabbi Chanina laughed at this principle or this statement of Rabbi Chia. He says, "My time come Mechayach." Why was he laughing at him? Because he paskin like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri that Chefzei Hefker are konim shvita, and therefore they're problematic over here for the two cities. Ve'ius really Rabbanan legula, and he paskins like the Rabbanan to the lenient side, which is that Chefzei Hefker are not konim shvita, and whoever possesses them first, they take on the tchum of that individual. Omishom the gasaver legula, because he is more lenient. Mind the tiny lechumra mechayachalei. Someone who's more stringent, you're going to laugh at them? Well, just because you disagree isn't a reason to laugh at someone else's statement. Ela mishom, this is why he laughed. Titania, we have a brayta. Narota moshkim umayanota novim arein karagle goladam. We have a brayta that says water bodies have a classification of not acquiring shvita on Shabbat. Umar says, v'tilma mikunasim. That brayta is talking about cases where the water or the water body is moving. Maybe that's why they're not kunei shvita. Over here, we're talking about a case where the water is still, or it's in a lake or in a crack that doesn't have the water moving. If that's the case, maybe it would be going to shvita. El mishum degdane tzarech michitza shel barzel hafsigo. The reason that he laughed about it is because he said he needs a metal partition along the middle of the water. A partition, or a michitza in general, is 10 tvachim. That 10 tvachim michitza will not reach the bottom of the water. He'll place it along the top of the water or the middle of the water, but it won't reach the bottom of the water. So even though from the top you see that separation, underneath that mechitza, the water is commingling. Why do you say you can't use a reed fence? Because they're porous. If they're porous, they have gaps between them, they're going to let the water flow back and forth. A metallic fence or mechitza has the same problem. Right, for the mechitza itself, or the air of mechitza itself, the water does not commingle. But the mechitza doesn't reach the bottom of this water body, and there's water commingling underneath. So there, bazel nami ayli b'umaya. There's water that's being commingled. So that's the reason that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina laughed over here, because he said, what's the difference between a metallic mechitza and a mechitza made out of reeds? The same problem you have by one, you have by the other, and there's no reason to upgrade to mechitza shel barzel. Gemara says, v'dilma tzarech v'en lo tokano. No, maybe he was suggesting that you must have a mechitza that completely divides the area up, but we don't have such a case. We don't have such a mechitza, and since you don't have that, you cannot utilize the water. So where it says, no, el mishum dekalu shegilu achachamim b'mayim. No, the reason that he was laughing, the chachamim gave certain dispensations when it comes to water on Shabbat and Yom Tov. Get the Rabbi Tavla. Rabbi Tavla me Rav. We saw this a couple of times already. In fact, Rabbi Tavla asked Rav, mechitza tluya, ma'u shetatir b'churva. If you have a suspended mechitza, it's 4x4 tefachim. The mechitzot are 10 tefachim deep, but they're off the ground. They're just suspended up in the air. So a person who's in a shute yachid, if he reaches over into this suspended mechitza and draws something up from below, is that which is below considered to be a shute yachid because of the mechitzot that are hanging, these suspended mechitzot? So amalei, ein mechitza tluya, materet el b'mayim. Rav responded to him that this suspended mechitza only works or only is efficacious with regards to drawing water. It's a dispensation of the Chachamim on Shabbat Yom Tov that if the window of the individual hangs over a water source, then he can put up this mechitza, this hanging or suspended mechitza, and draw the water from below into his house as if that makes it into a reshut yachid below. But as a dispensation that's only by water, not by anything else. Because kalu shekilu Chachamim b'mayim. Chachamim were extra lenient when it came to water sources or water on Shabbat. And so that's the point here. We see that by mayim, by water, the Chachamim are mekil. If that's the case, then a mechitza shel kanim should have been sufficient over here. Mechitza shel kanim is a suspended mechitza, and that should be sufficient because the Chachamim are very mekil when it comes to water. Why are you going out of your way to get a mechitza shel barzel, to get this metallic fence in there? The Chachamim, when it came to water, were much more mekil. And since in the end they're going to commingle the water either way, whether it's reeds or barzel, doesn't make any sense to use the barzel, should use the tanim. And therefore he laughed at Rabbi Chia's statement because it doesn't make so much sense to switch into a metallic fence when the reed fence should have been sufficient. Okay, we're going to stop over here.